Chapter 7, Stewardship While Living. The work of benevolence twice blessed. Divine wisdom has appointed, in the plan of salvation, the law of action and reaction, making the work of benevolence, in all its branches, twice blessed. God could have accomplished his object in saving sinners without the help of man, but he knew that man could not be happy without acting a part in the great work of redemption. That man might not lose the blessed results of benevolence, our Redeemer formed the plan of enlisting him as his co-worker. Would you make your property secure? Place it in the hand that bears the nail print of the crucifixion. Retain it in your possession, and it will be to your eternal loss. Give it to God, and from that moment it bears his inscription. It is sealed with his immutability. Would you enjoy your substance? Then use it for the blessing of the suffering. In order to be happy ourselves, we must live to make others happy. It is well for us to yield our possessions, our talents, and our affections in grateful devotion to Christ, and in that way find happiness here and immortal glory hereafter. Lay up treasures in heaven. Christ entreats, "Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven." This work of transferring your possessions to the world above is worthy of all your best energies. It is of the highest importance, and involves your eternal interests. That which you bestow in the cause of God is not lost. All that is given for the salvation of souls and the glory of God is invested in the most successful enterprise in this life and in the life to come. Your talents of gold and silver, if given to the exchangers, are gaining continually in value, which will be registered to your account in the kingdom of heaven. You are to be the recipients of the eternal wealth that has increased in the hands of the exchangers. In giving to the work of God, you are laying up for yourselves treasures in heaven. All that you lay up above is secure from disaster and loss, and is increasing to an eternal, an enduring substance. Stewardship, a personal responsibility. Parents should exercise the right that God has given them. He entrusted to them the talents he would have them use to his glory. The children were not to become responsible for the talents of the father. While they have sound minds and good judgment, parents should, with prayerful consideration, and with the help of proper counselors who have experience in the truth and a knowledge of the divine will, make disposition of their property. If they have children who are afflicted or are struggling in poverty, and who will make a judicious use of means, they should be considered. But if they have unbelieving children who have abundance of this world, and who are serving the world, they commit a sin against the master who has made them his stewards, by placing means in their hands merely because they are their children. God's claims are not to be lightly regarded. And it should be distinctly understood that because parents have made their will, this will not prevent them from giving means to the cause of God while they live. This they should do. They should have the satisfaction here, and the reward hereafter, of disposing of their surplus means while they live. They should do their part to advance the cause of God. They should use the means lent them by the Master to carry on the work which needs to be done in his vineyard. The love of money lies at the root of nearly all the crimes committed in the world. Fathers who selfishly retain their means to enrich their children, and who do not see the wants of the cause of God and relieve them, make a terrible mistake. The children whom they think to bless with their means are cursed with it. Money left to children frequently becomes a root of bitterness. They often quarrel over the property left them, and in case of a will, are seldom all satisfied with the disposition made by the father. And instead of the means left exciting gratitude and reverence for his memory, it creates dissatisfaction, murmuring, envy, and disrespect. Brothers and sisters who were at peace with one another are sometimes made at variance, and family dissensions are often the result of inherited means. Riches are desirable only as a means of supplying present wants, and of doing good to others. But inherited riches oftener become a snare to the possessor than a blessing. Parents should not seek to have their children encounter the temptations to which they expose them in leaving them means which they themselves have made no effort to earn. I was shown that some children professing to believe the truth would, in an indirect manner, influence the father to keep his means for his children, instead of appropriating it to the cause of God while he lives. Those who have influenced their father to shift his stewardship upon them little know what they are doing. They are gathering upon themselves double responsibility, that of balancing the father's mind so that he did not fulfill the purpose of God in the disposition of the means lent him of God to be used to his glory, and the additional responsibility of becoming stewards of means that should have been put out to the exchangers by the father, that the master could have received his own with usury. Many parents make a great mistake in placing their property out of their hands into the hands of their children while they are themselves responsible for the use or abuse of the talents lent them of God. Neither parents nor children are made happier by this transfer of property. And the parents, if they live a few years even, generally regret this action on their part. Parental love in their children is not increased by this course. The children do not feel increased gratitude and obligation to their parents for their liberality. A curse seems to lie at the root of the matter, which only crops out in selfishness on the part of the children, and unhappiness and miserable feelings of cramped dependence on the part of the parents. If parents, while they live, would assist their children to help themselves, it would be better than to leave them a large amount at death. Children who are left to rely principally upon their own exertions make better men and women, and are better fitted for practical life, than those children who have depended upon their father's estate. The children left to depend upon their own resources generally prize their abilities, improve their privileges, and cultivate and direct their faculties to accomplish a purpose in life. They frequently develop characters of industry, frugality, and moral worth, which lie at the foundation of success in the Christian life. Those children for whom parents do the most, frequently feel under the least obligation toward them. Shifting responsibility to others. Those Sabbath-keeping brethren who shift the responsibility of their stewardship into the hands of their wives, while they themselves are capable of managing the same, are unwise, and in the transfer displease God. The stewardship of the husband cannot be transferred to the wife. Yet this is sometimes attempted, to the great injury of both. A believing husband has sometimes transferred his property to his unbelieving companion, hoping thereby to gratify her, disarm her opposition, and finally induce her to believe the truth. But this is no more nor less than an attempt to purchase peace, or to hire the wife to believe the truth. The means which God has lent to advance his cause the husband transfers to one who has no sympathy for the truth. What account will such a steward render when the great master requires his own with usury? Believing parents have frequently transferred their property to their unbelieving children, thus putting it out of their power to render to God the things that are his. By so doing, they lay off that responsibility which God has laid upon them, and place in the enemy's ranks means which God has entrusted to them to be returned to him by being invested in his cause when he shall require it of them. It is not in God's order that parents who are capable of managing their own business should give up the control of their property, even to children who are of the same faith. These seldom possess as much devotion to the cause as they should, and they have not been schooled in adversity and affliction, so as to place a high estimate upon the eternal treasure, and less upon the earthly. The means placed in the hands of such is the greatest evil. It is a temptation to them to place their affections upon the earthly, and trust to property, and feel that they need but little besides. When means which they have not acquired by their own exertion comes into their possession, they seldom use it wisely. The husband who transfers his property to his wife opens for her a wide door of temptation, whether she is a believer or an unbeliever. If she is a believer, and naturally penurious, inclined to selfishness and acquisitiveness, the battle will be much harder for her with her husband's stewardship and her own to manage. In order to be saved, she must overcome all those peculiar evil traits, and imitate the character of her divine Lord, seeking opportunity to do others good, loving others as Christ has loved us. She should cultivate the precious gift of love possessed so largely by our Savior. His life was characterized by noble, disinterested benevolence. His whole life was not marred by one selfish act. Dying charity versus living benevolence. I saw that many withhold from the cause while they live, quieting their consciences that they will be charitable at death. They hardly dare exercise faith and trust in God to give anything while living. But this deathbed charity is not what Christ requires of his followers. It cannot excuse the selfishness of the living. Those who hold fast their property till the last moment, surrender it to death rather than to the cause. Losses are occurring continually. Banks fail, and property is consumed in very many ways. Many purpose to do something, but they delay the matter, and Satan works to prevent the means from coming into the treasury at all. It is lost before it is returned to God, and Satan exalts that it is so. If you would do good with your means, do it at once lest Satan get it in his hands and thus hinder the work of God. Many times, when the Lord has opened the way for brethren to handle their means to advance his cause, the agents of Satan have presented some enterprise by which they were positive the brethren could double their means. They take the bait, their money is invested, and the cause, and frequently themselves, never receive a dollar. Brethren, remember the cause, and when you have means at your command, lay up for yourselves a good foundation against the time to come, that you may lay hold on eternal life. Jesus for your sakes became poor, that you through his poverty might be made rich in heavenly treasure. What will you give for Jesus, who has given all for you? It will not do for you to depend on making your charity gifts in testamentary bequests at death. You cannot calculate with the least degree of surety that the cause will ever be benefited by them. Satan works with acute skill to stir up the relatives, and every false position is taken to gain to the world that which was solemnly dedicated to the cause of God. Much less than the sum willed is always received. Satan even puts it into the hearts of men and women to protest against their relatives doing what they wish in the bestowment of their property. They seem to regard everything given to the Lord as robbing the relatives of the deceased. If you want your means to go to the cause, appropriate it, or all that you do not really need for a support, while you live. A few of the brethren are doing this and enjoying the pleasure of being their own executors. Will the covetousness of men make it necessary that they shall be deprived of life in order that the property which God has lent them shall not be useless forever? Let none of you draw upon yourselves the doom of the unprofitable servant who hid his Lord's money on the earth. Dying charity is a poor substitute for living benevolence. Many will to their friends and relatives all accept a very small pittance of their property. This they leave for their supreme friend, who became poor for their sakes, who suffered insult, mockery, and death, that they might become sons and daughters of God. And yet they expect when the righteous dead shall come forth to immortal life that this friend will take them into his everlasting habitations. The cause of Christ is robbed, not by a mere passing thought, not by an unpremeditated act. No, by your own deliberate act you made your will, placing your property at the disposal of unbelievers. After having robbed God during your lifetime, you continue to rob him after your death, and you do this with the full consent of all your powers of mind, in a document called your will. What do you think will be your master's will toward you for thus appropriating his goods? What will you say when an account is demanded of your stewardship? Brethren, awake from your life of selfishness, and act like consistent Christians. The Lord requires you to economize your means and let every dollar not needed for your comfort flow into the treasury. Sisters, take that 10 cents, that 20 cents, that dollar which you were about to spend for candies, for ruffles, or for ribbons, and donate it to God's cause. Many of our sisters earn good wages, but it is nearly all spent in gratifying their pride of dress. The wants of the cause will continually increase as we near the close of time. Means is needed to give young men a short course of study in our schools, to prepare them for efficient work in the ministry and in different branches of the cause. We are not coming up to our privilege in this matter. All schools among us will soon be closed up. How much more might have been done had men obeyed the requirements of Christ in Christian beneficence? What an influence would this readiness to give all for Christ have had upon the world? It would have been one of the most convincing arguments in favor of the truth we profess to believe, an argument which the world could not misunderstand nor gainsay. Let us individually go to work to stimulate others by our example of disinterested benevolence. The work might have gone forward with far greater power had all done what they could to supply the treasury with means. Business affairs at loose ends. Brother and Sister L should have confidence in the work for these last days, and should be perfecting Christian character, that they may receive the eternal reward when Jesus comes. Brother L is failing in physical and mental vigor. He is becoming incapable of bearing much responsibility. He should counsel with his brethren who are discreet and faithful. Brother L is a steward of God. He has been entrusted with means, and should be awake to his duty, and render to God the things that are God's. He should not fail to understand the claims that God has upon him. While he lives, and has his reasoning powers, he should improve the opportunity of appropriating the property that God has entrusted to him, instead of leaving it for others to use and appropriate after the close of his life. Satan is ever ready to take advantage of the weaknesses and infirmities of men to suit his own purposes. He is a wily adversary, and has outgeneraled many whose purposes were good to benefit the cause of God with their means. Some have neglected the work that God has given them to do in appropriating their means. And while they are negligent in securing to the cause of God the means that he has lent them, Satan comes in and turns that means into his own ranks. Brother L should move more cautiously. Men who are not of our faith obtain means of him upon various pretenses. He trusts them, believing them to be honest. It will be impossible for him to get back all the means he has let slip out of his hands into the enemy's ranks. He could make a safe investment of his means by aiding the cause of God, and thus laying up for himself treasures in heaven. Frequently he is unable to help when he would, because he is crippled, and cannot command the means to do so. When the Lord calls for his means, it is frequently in the hands of those to whom he has lent it, some of whom never design to pay, and others feel no anxiety in the matter. Satan will accomplish his purpose as thoroughly through dishonest borrowers as in any other way. All that the adversary of truth and righteousness is working for, is to prevent the advancement of our Redeemer's kingdom. He works through agents to carry out his purposes. If he can prevent means from going into the treasury of God, he is successful in one branch of his work. That means which should have been used to aid in the great plan of saving souls, he has retained in his ranks, to aid him in his work. Brother L should have his business all straight, and not left at loose ends. It is his privilege to be rich in good works, and to lay up for himself a good foundation against the time to come, that he may lay hold on eternal life. It is not safe for him to follow his failing judgment. He should counsel with experienced brethren, and seek wisdom of God, that he may do up his work well. He should now be really in earnest, providing himself bags which wax not old, a treasure in the heavens that faileth not. Help needed now. Many who are able to give liberally when the cause is in need, selfishly retain their means, and soothe their conscience with a plan for doing some great thing for the cause of God after their death. They make a will, giving a large sum to the church and its various interests, and then settle down with a feeling that they have done all that is required of them. Wherein have they denied self by this act? They have, on the contrary, revealed selfishness. When they have no further use for their money, They propose to give it to God. But they will retain it as long as they can, till they are compelled to relinquish it by a messenger that cannot be turned aside. God has made us all His stewards, and in no case has He authorized us to neglect our duty or leave it for others to do. The call for means to advance the cause of truth will never be more urgent than now. Our money will never do a greater amount of good than at the present time. Every day of delay in rightly appropriating it is limiting the period in which it will do good in the saving of souls. If we leave others to accomplish that which God has left for us to do, we wrong ourselves and Him who gave us all we have. How can others do our work of benevolence any better than we can do it ourselves? So far as practicable, God would have every man an executor of his own will in this matter, during his lifetime. Adversity, accident, or intrigue may cut off forever intended acts of benevolence, when he who has accumulated a fortune is no longer by to guard it. It is sad that so many neglect the golden opportunity to do good in the present, but wait to be cast out of their stewardship before giving back to the Lord the means which He has lent them to be used for His glory. One marked feature in the teachings of Christ is the frequency and earnestness with which He rebuked the sin of covetousness, and pointed out the danger of worldly acquisitions and the inordinate love of gain. In the mansions of the rich, in the temple, and in the streets, He warned those who inquired after salvation, "Take heed, and beware of covetousness. Ye cannot serve God and mammon." It is this increasing devotion to money-getting, the selfishness which the desire for gain begets, that deadens the spirituality of many in the church, and removes from them the favor of God. When the head and hands are constantly occupied with planning and toiling for the accumulation of riches, the claims of God and humanity are forgotten. If God has blessed us with prosperity, it is not that our time and attention should be diverted from Him and given to that which He has lent us. The giver is greater than the gift. We have been bought with a price, we are not our own. Have we forgotten that infinite price paid for our redemption? Is gratitude dead in the heart? Does not the cross of Christ put to shame a life of selfish ease and indulgence? New fields that must be worked. Dear Brother Craw, I write you because you and I are getting old, and we need now to carefully examine ourselves. What are we doing with the talent of means lent us by the Master? What have you done during your life, my brother? Have you returned to the Lord that which is truly His? Do you feel that you have done all He requires of you to advance His work? While praying over the matter of our great need of money with which to enter new fields and lift up the standard in places where the truth has never been preached, you were presented to me. It was as though your name was spoken, and the Lord said, "He has my entrusted money, and it would be for His own eternal interest to place it in new missionary fields that must be worked." I decided to write to you, my brother. Cannot you send us a donation in our great need? If the Lord signifies to you that He wants the money you have to be used in the advancement of His work, will you not send me money to invest? I have used everything of my own, and now I ask you to return to the Lord His own entrusted goods. We see so many fields opening in every direction. People are calling for us to come and hold meetings with them, and we dare not refuse. I have tried to mortgage my place, but the banks in Australia do not care to invest money in this way. The Lord has indicated plainly that you could relieve us by investing means in the good work. There is a great work to be done, and we wish to move in the opening providence of God. Considerable advancement has been made, and we cannot stop now. I address you definitely. Will you now give back a portion of your Lord's money, and relieve us in our pressing necessity? May the Lord make your heart willing, is my prayer. We wish to do everything that it is possible to do to save souls from perishing in their sins. One soul is of more value than the whole world. We realize that a good work is being done. About 35 souls have been baptized in Newcastle, and 15 more are waiting for baptism. The whole place is aroused. The cities near Newcastle must be worked. Shall we be hindered for lack of money when it is in the hands of God's stewards and should come to us? In the parable we are shown that everyone has received something from the Master. Each is to do his part in supplying the needs that occur in advancing the truth. Property is a talent. The Lord sends his message, "Sell that ye have, and give alms." All that we have is the Lord's, without any question. The silver is mine, and the gold is mine, saith the Lord of hosts. Why should we not, when pressed financially, present our great need to whom God has signified hold his money in trust, to be used in advancing the work of saving souls ready to perish? We do not want you to sow sparingly, because then you will reap sparingly. We want you, my brother, to lay up treasure in heaven. They that sow bountifully shall reap also bountifully. The reaping will be proportionate to the sowing. Read the 9th chapter of 2 Corinthians. Soon Christ will reward every man according to his works. Soon your money will pass out of your hands for another to handle. It will then not be the test of your stewardship. Now it is yours, by which the Lord desires to try you. While you are alive, be your own almoner and receive the blessings that will come to you in a faithful discharge of duty. Give back to God that which is his own. This is God's way. He always lends his talents to his stewards, to be used to spread the knowledge of the truth. This work cannot be done without the funds that are in the hands of God's servants. We now invite you to dispose of your property. This the Lord calls upon you to do. We have to build meeting houses and hospitals for our sick. We want means to advance the work of God in this new world. Be liberal, that God may advance his cause. God will teach us our duty. There are poor men and women who are writing to me for advice as to whether they shall sell their homes and give the proceeds to the cause. They say the appeals for means stir their souls, and they want to do something for the Master who has done everything for them. I would say to such, it may not be your duty to sell your little homes just now, but go to God for yourselves. The Lord will certainly hear your earnest prayers for wisdom to understand your duty. If there was more seeking God for heavenly wisdom, and less seeking wisdom from men, there would be far greater light from heaven, and God would bless the humble seeker. But I can say to those to whom God has entrusted goods, who have lands and houses, commence your selling and giving alms. Make no delay. God expects more of you than you have been willing to do. We call upon you who have means to inquire with earnest prayer, what is the extent of the divine claim upon me and my property? There is work to be done now to make ready a people to stand in the day of the Lord. Means must be invested in the work of saving souls who, in turn, shall bring their offerings to the treasury, and win souls to the Lord.